These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Call and give us your take and then get off the phone.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You have this amazing crystal ball. We come in, we have these meetings with you before every game, and you're talking about players who you know you're confident are going to perform well. David Price, you mentioned today.
DP?
You mentioned. Believed in David Price. Picks up his first win as a starter in the postseason. You also mentioned Rafael Devers as a potential star in this game, and he hits a key three-run home run. Where is that belief in your players? Where does it come from?
Well, they're talented. I mean, in any given day, whatever lineup we throw out there, we feel we can score runs. Mm-hmm. And whoever we put on the mound, they're going to do the job. Whoever comes from the bullpen, they're going to shut it down. And at the end of the day, we have a pretty good chance to win. But it's all about them. Yeah. They're talented. They're good. They're very humble. They're fun to be around. And like I told them in New York, you know, we have 8 more to go. Now we have 4 more, boys. Let's be ready for whoever we play in the World Series.
Congratulations, Alex.
Agenda Free Friday is brought to you by Planet Fitness. The world judges they don't. PlanetFitness.com. We continue to discuss the Red Sox ALCS win over Houston and look ahead to the World Series. Dodgers or Brewers? Carlos in Worcester, lead us off this hour. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm just going to throw something out there. I'm concerned about the closer, Kimbrough, because we haven't been in one-run games. So if we do go up to the World, I mean, when we do play the winner of the Brewers, L.A., I'm just scared that, you know...
Well, let me stop you, Carlos. Thank you for the call. What's your concern level with Craig Kimbrough?
It's pretty high still. He was better last night, but it's still a little nerve-wracking. He just didn't load the bases this time. So, to me, if I'm them, I watch him through the series, and let's just, hypothetically, if they get to Game 7 and they got to bring Kimbrough in and you've had the same problems, it wouldn't shock me if they bypass him and you see Eovaldi come back out for that ninth. In other words, play the same scenario as last night. I think last night they put Kimbrough in the game because they still get a round to play and they can't fill the eighth and ninth with starters in the World Series.
Again, you don't buy the fact that they believe in the adjustment he made? He figured out he was tipping his pitches and now he's corrected that?
No, I don't. I mean, you know, I think that they will use whatever they can use to get Kimbrough to believe that that was a problem. You follow me?
Yo, sure.
In other words, they want, because I think ultimately they look at Kimbrough and say he can't handle the pressure. So they tell him it's a mechanical thing or that he's tipping his pitch so that if he believes it and it works, then go with it.
Matt in Malden joins us on the Red Sox. Hi, Matt. How are you?
Hey, fellas. So Felger in particular, but all of you have talked about how improbable it is that we get this far without the real Chris Sale and with Kimbrough being as shaky as he is. But almost as profound an absence, I've felt like, has been Mookie Betts' bat. You know, for a batting champ, for an MVP, it feels like his offense has been pretty quiet, pretty absent. I don't remember much of the interleague game, but is there any reason to see his bat tapping up in the World Series against either the Dodgers or the Brewers?
Okay, Matt. Has there been an approach against Betts that has worked?
I mean, I haven't seen anything that I would say over and over, you know, slide away, they're hitting the corners and they're burying them. He's missing pitches. I mean, I think it's really that simple. He got, you know, at one point last night when we were watching the game before we did the post game, we went through and looked at actual diagrams. And against Verlander last night, he got fastballs in the middle of the plate the first three at-bats, and he missed them all. So, and this is a pattern. It happened in game one with Verlander and Betts. He had the bases loaded. First pitch, hit a ground ball to third base. He's just not getting the ball in the air. He's not hitting the ball with the same, you know, force that he did earlier.
He would still get MVP votes for me for that series.
Well, the outfield defense was terrific.
As I said, I mean, you've mentioned it. Like, did he save 4 or 5 runs in that series?
Maybe.
I mean, he saved 2 on the fan interference.
Yep.
Getting that call by getting up there and, you know, being competitive on that play. He buys that call. So that's 2 runs right there.
The Kemp double, he saved another one.
Throwing out Kemp at second to lead off the eighth that night. That's a third. You've made the case that the double from who that he wheeled around, and was it kept Gonzalez at third?
Yeah, Marwin Gonzalez in game 4.
So that's 4.
Yep. And then last night he might have saved 1 or 2.
Okay, was that a home run ball, you think?
I think that ball was going to hit the wall. I still think he was a couple of feet from the wall, and I don't think it was going over.
Close.
But I'll tell you what, it's an extra base hit.
Close. So, like, I think he saved a handful of runs, and how many RBI did he have in the series? So
I can tell you that for the postseason, he has 3 RBI.
So, I mean, I don't know. If you add those run saves to his RBI, like I was willing to make a case for Mookie Betts for ALCS MVP because they just showed a graphic on MLB Network, Alex. I'm watching it too, but I'm not going to demand any apologies there. They just showed a graphic, or was it us? I'm sorry. Someone just showed a graphic that Jackie Bradley Jr. goes down and has the lowest batting average of anyone to ever win an LCS MVP.
3 for 15. 200.
He had 200 and won the MVP.
Yeah. I mean, again, three-run double, grand slam, two-run homer. Those are his three hits. Now, Bradley, you know, in the postseason has walked more than he's walked in the past, at least past postseasons. But Betts had one RBI in the series. I just looked it up. He only hit 217 in the series. He's hitting 205 for the postseason.
So, look, it's happening. It's happened to Yelich over on that side. Like, I don't know. You come in with that reputation. You get pitched to, and it's different. Mark in Malden joins us. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how you doing, boys? I just want to preface what I'm about to say with saying that I absolutely love trash talk in sports, and I don't want to discourage it. I love the hate, Mari. I love it. But I just want to point out that when you do it, you got to step up. Judge in the ALDS, 1 for 7 after he ran his mouth, and then Bregman, 2 for 12 in the ALCS after he talked. And one of those hits are the ones that goes right under Devers' glove. But also to that point, the Red Sox, they pitched him well. They pitched him up and in, and they hit him twice. I don't know if that has to do with anything, but up and in, getting him uncomfortable. You know, I haven't seen that type of shrinkage since in the back of my Honda on prom night, thankfully.
Okay. Bregman also got robbed. I mean, was that him that got robbed by Betts last night? Who was that?
No, he got robbed by Benintendi at the end of the other game.
Yeah.
I don't remember who hit that ball that Betts caught last night.
Either way. Yeah, it's stupid. It's stupid to open your mouth like that when the thing's not settled. It's the only time I will allow and think it's even halfway appropriate, competitively speaking, is if you're a big underdog. And then you have to talk yourself into it, and you've got to announce to the world that we're not afraid of them, and we're not afraid of you, and we'll challenge you because you're so far behind them talent-wise that you got to get some extra thing in there. And so if you're a deep underdog, do and say whatever it is you think is going to work. Like, throw whatever you have against the wall. But if you're even or you're a favorite, or like, why would you ever give the opponent extra reason? It's so dumb.
Oh, it's stupid. I mean, really, again, and in the last two games, forget the last three, Bregman went 0-for-9. 0-for-9. And in his final at-bat of the season, and I did love this, Eovaldi struck him out with a 102-mile-an-hour fastball. Right, the guy that they would not throw a fastball to in the early part of the series. The guy who posted on Instagram the three home runs that Eovaldi gave up to Houston earlier in the year. Final pitch of his season, 102 from the guy you trolled right by your ass. Right by you.
Yeah, you
sit down.
You can't tell me that this didn't factor in, and especially after Eovaldi's start. They had to be looking at each other like, oh. What do we do here? You know, and they start thinking about it, and obviously they pulled the post because they know it was in bad form.
So, look, I'm glad we're showing it because this isn't, Maz. I mentioned this to you off the air. We're showing it on NBC Sports Boston right now, or about to. He had a recoil on that pitch. I remember him. I didn't realize it was Bregman, or I didn't pay attention at the time. There was one pitch where he had a recoil with both his arm and his leg, and that was it. Yeah, he knew it was Bregman. He knew it was two strikes, and he reached back for a little extra.
Oh, he did. He gassed it up for him. No two ways about it. I can't remember the last time any Red Sox pitcher threw 102. I don't ever remember it happening.
And as you mentioned earlier, maybe just now, they weren't throwing him fastballs. They don't throw fastballs.
No, this guy, they wussed around him the whole series. Soft stuff away, no fastballs. He hit a fastball against Kimbrel when Kimbrel loaded the bases because at that point, Kimbrel was a mental case. But otherwise, no fastballs. Then last night, 102. Hit this, chump.
Oh, you have Price going. Yeah, post that, which, you know, good. You know, they should crow a little bit because the Astros came off as complete a-holes. I referred to them earlier. You know, I was trying to think of a good comp, and maybe this might not even be it, but they remind me a lot of those, like, mid-2000s Colts. You got your one token championship, lot of talk, you're high-powered, everyone was afraid of them. Look, I picked them to take down the Red Sox in 5 games of the series. I couldn't have been more wrong. But you poke them a little bit, you get them uncomfortable, and they fold.
Well, they did in this series, no question about that. Brandon in Lowell. Go ahead, Brandon.
Hey, guys. First time, long time. Maz, this is actually a question for you. I actually found an old YouTube clip of you back in 2014 calling Clayton Kershaw a confirmed choking dog.
Yep.
I am not sure if you saw his NLCS game one performance. I was not that impressed. I saw him load the bases early. He looked like sweaty, nervous. Wanted your thoughts on that. Thanks, guys.
Okay. He was really good in game two.
I was going to say he was good in the next one.
Or his second start, I meant to say. Yeah.
So that was five, right?
That was the last game.
Yeah. I mean, so look, you know, Kershaw has gotten past some of it. But when you weigh the body of work, his postseason performance versus his regular season performance, and he's right up there with Maddux and Glavin, Maddux in particular, of guys who just did not meet the same standard in the playoffs. So now, do I fear him? Sure, because if he's on, you're in for a tough night.
He's not quite the same guy, and he admits that his velocity's way down.
Yeah, he's throwing 91. He's not throwing in the mid to high 90s anymore. And so, but that curveball is still
legit.
It's a hammer.
And again, every dog has his day. So it's like, if you're talented and you pound at it, you pound at it, you pound it, eventually you break through. So his thing isn't nearly as striking as Price, because Kershaw has had a handful of really, you know, good postseason starts. I don't know how many wins he officially has. So it's not as dramatic as Price, but he's kind of in the same boat where he's got to put up or shut up too.
I mean, there are a lot of guys on that Dodgers team, like the Red Sox, that are going for their first ring.
That whole Dodgers team, I think, you know, they're like you. But maybe even more so. I mean, they've been right there for a couple of years now. Right there. And that, I think, makes them a little dangerous.
It does.
We continue with your thoughts on Agenda Free Friday right after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mazz.
I saw him last year, I think it was Father's Day. He pitched against Houston in Houston, and he pitched well. I saw him in the playoffs against the Astros. He pitched well. This year, he pitched in Houston that Saturday, pitched well against them, and he pitched here against the Astros and pitched well again. I know how good he is. I know he's been he's pitched well against them, and I trust the guy.
This isn't about me. You know, I understand the narratives. I get that. You know, I deserve those narratives, but this is bigger than David Price. This isn't about me. This is about the Boston Red Sox.
And a strikeout for Price. Called strike three. David Price has excellent command to start. Two outs. Price deals, and it's a called strike three. The swing and a miss. David Price spots that fastball on the inside corner again. He picks up his fifth strikeout, and he got him. That is strikeout number eight. Mariznick right off the end of the bat. Price fields it, throws it low, dug out, and it's in time. What a play. Price over to first base and the Gold Glover, Mitch Moreland. David Price is through five. And a swing and a miss. It's his ninth strikeout for David Price. And I'm sure David Price has mountains and mountains of crow to dish out, because he finally has his moment as a starter. Six innings, no runs, and his first career postseason win sends the Red Sox to the World Series.
You've said that it doesn't matter what you do in the regular season. All that matters is how you perform on this grand stage in the postseason. Does pitching your team to the World Series sound like enough?
Not yet, no. Not for me. You know, not for the other guys in the clubhouse. You know, we got four more wins. That was very, very special. Absolutely, but we want more.
Again, I ask about David Price. Did he silence his critics? Did he silence his critics last night?
I mean, temporarily.
He killed the narrative. You know, this was a perpetual postseason loser, and now he's no longer that.
So where do we go from here with David Price?
I'll let you know when he pitches again. Like, you know, and I know that that's an easy cop-out answer. But, you know, you look at it and you say, what he did last night is he broke through a barrier. That's it. And I give him all the credit in the world for it, because the deeper he went into this thing, the harder it got. And so now last night, I think Murray's right. They got him in a good spot. He was up 3-1. He was on short rest. The night before, he thought he might have to come in relief. So it's not as if he could mentally sit there and go, my next chance is in 5 days and then 4 days and then three. Like, you know, there was no buildup to it. It was, you didn't know how it was going to happen, when it was going to happen, any of that. And I think that worked to his advantage. All of that because he wasn't able to psych himself out. But if he ends up losing the next nine in a row again, I mean, what, you know, in terms of the narrative on his career, how does that change anything?
Yeah, I want to say he can only go up from here, but, you know, if there's a pivotal start in this World Series, or maybe he's brought in out of the bullpen in Game 7 and he blows it, then, you know, I think we're back to where it was before last night.
I'll tell you, though, I am looking forward to his, when they do the opening introductions for the World Series at Fenway on Tuesday. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a good, hell, they give him a standing ovation. He left the game the last time.
And they boot his ass off the field, Game 1 against New York, Game 2 against New York.
So this one now, he pitches the clincher, and he was brilliant in this game. I mean, you can't say that enough. This was not a win being handed to him. He outdueled the other guy.
Apologize, Murray. You owe him an apology.
Yeah.
No, I just said good for him. That's all.
Here's
good for
him. Wayne and Grafton. What do you got, Wayne?
Yeah, first of all, it's all about peace and love. I mean, you know, love you, Mike. You know, I should come down there and give all of you guys a group hug. How would you like that?
Love you, Wayne.
Love you, Wayne. I can say that.
Yeah, but JBJ, you have to give Jim Ed Rice a little credit. I heard on Nesson that he gave him a few tips on how to shorten his stroke. I mean, I tried it, and it worked for me. Okay, so good luck, Red Sox.
Yeah, good job. 3 for 15, and he wins the MVP.
Isn't that unbelievable? It was like Victorino the year in the World Series. I think he had one hit or two hits or something. There were a grand slam and a three-run double or something like that. And I don't remember all the particulars. I think Ortiz, in the year they played the Tigers in the LCS, that same year, 2013, didn't Ortiz have like one hit or two hits in the LCS? And one of them was that
home run, yeah.
Right? I mean, timing is everything at this time of year. You got to get the big ones.
John in Cambridge. Go ahead, John.
Hey, how's it going? I just want to say that the MVP should be Alex Cora. He took control of the clubhouse. He fired Hanley Ramirez as the first move he made. It's a big difference from John Farrell, who let the Machado incident happen, who let the Dustin Pedroia incident happen, who let the Price incident with Eckersley happen. He lost control. The MVP should be Alex Cora, and that's no question. If you guys don't see that, you're morons, just like the fans that thought.
Okay. I don't know why I needed to go there. I think the managerial change was absolutely instrumental. Instrumental. The only thing I would just say, you know, is Cora the only one that could have changed the atmosphere there? I think it was more about, I think it was as much about eliminating Farrell as it was adding Cora, as good as he's been. I think eliminating Farrell was the first big step. And you can tell that by all the love that's going around the room. All the guys telling each other they love each other, which would not happen under Farrell. They didn't have that kind of atmosphere there. So Cora deserves credit. Making the move in the first place deserves credit. Firing Hanley, though, I'm sorry. When the cops pull over someone with a trunk full of heroin and fentanyl, and the first call the guy makes is to your outfielder, you get rid of the outfielder. So I don't think that was an Alex Cora thing. I think that was a common sense thing. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that felt like an organizational decision.
It felt like a common sense decision. Kelly in Maine, what do you got for me, Kelly?
Yeah, my brothers and I were texting every postseason game, and we were all in agreement that it's a biased play-by-play call.
Okay, so that is Maine, where literally their phone system is tomato cans and strings.
I'm going to put socks in my mouth before I call the show. Oh, you're the teacher from the Peanuts. Okay.
So her comment line said TBS broadcasters. I'm sure there was another New Englander who wants to bitch and cry about the neutral site, national broadcasters. It seems to be, again, a thing that you just do. Everybody sucks. You can't stand anyone who does the Patriots games. You can't stand anyone who does the Red Sox games. I get it. Your local broadcasters are the only ones who can do anything, even though your local Red Sox broadcaster couldn't tell whether Benintendi caught the ball or not, and then he fell out of his chair.
She did. She said they were biased.
Yeah. Is that what she said?
I heard the word biased, yeah.
Oh, God. So painful. It's so painful. I'm telling you, it's not the broadcaster's problem. Not in this sport. This sport's problem is the time of game. So if you have to listen to anyone other than Felger and Maz for 4 hours, you're going to hate that person by the end of the 4 hours. That's what's happening with Darling and Anderson and Smoltz and these other guys. Believe me, I've grown to hate John Smoltz on the other side too. And then I realize I had to listen to him for 5 hours and 15 minutes. And he's filling 5 hours and 15 minutes. That's an impossible job, not his team's either. So of course you're going to hate them.
So you know what you should do is use the talk radio formula on that one. Every 20 minutes, you turn them off.
That's right. You flip the audience.
Exactly. 20 minutes. Listen to 20 minutes at a time, then turn it off for 40 and turn it off for 20.
If I'm going to say anything, what these broadcasts need are the three-man booth.
Absolutely.
Because, again, last night felt like a snap, didn't it? Compared to the night before, it was 3.5 hours. 3.5 hours for a... that constitutes like a brisk game now. But if you're going to have to fill 3.5, 4, 4.5 hours, put a third guy in there. Put a third guy in there so you've just got more material and more stuff going around. The games are too long for two guys.
So in the World Series, I think you get a three-man booth, don't you?
Do you?
In the past, didn't they add Verducci up there?
Well, Verducci's always chiming in, right? So Verducci and... is it still Rosenthal? So they're always sort of on the NL side. I mean, now that you say this, it's Smoltz, and I keep forgetting the play-by-play guy, but they're always bringing in Verducci and I think Rosenthal too.
Yeah.
They're bringing in both those guys. So it's a little, you get a little bit more.
Yeah, and Rosenthal's usually on the sideline like Lauren Chahadi was for TBS. But I think Verducci's in the booth for the World Series.
But Chahadi doesn't like, you know, there'll be a play in the game.
Right.
And they'll say, Ken, what do you got in there? He said, well, according to one NL general manager they talked about, if you pitch Machado low and in, so it helps a little bit. But if I hear John Smoltz tell me one more time about Josh Hader, I got it on Hader. I got it. He's a weapon. You got to know when to use him and when not to use him. Every other thing out of Smoltz's mouth is, well, if you use Hader, well, he can't use Hader. Like, I got it about Hader. Would you stop with this? So, like, I feel the same thing, but it's not Smoltz's problem. It's that he's got 5 hours to fill. And so you're going to run into problems no matter who that is.
I'm telling you, every 20 minutes. 20 minutes goes by, you turn it off. 20 minutes goes by, you turn it back on. 20 minutes goes by, you turn it off.
No, the audio, I mean. That's a radio thing, and thank God, because 20 minutes of Felger and Mass?
Oh, no, that's concentrated.
Just about perfect. Here you go.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Mass. Every afternoon, it's Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It really is a difference maker.
Ooh. Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
And the Boston Red Sox are headed to the World Series.
That was very, very special, but we want more.
Oh, what delicious irony. How you all want me now.
Get Price and you can put Price in.
You've mocked me and you've booed me.
Boo! You suck!
Said I'm a bad fit for this town.
Love it or leave it, Price.
You've laughed at my dog, Astro. Ah! Said it was wrong how I talked to Ed.
David Price, wake
that
up.
That I'm a $30 million baby.
$30 million for what?
That needs to show respect. But now you want a World Series ring.
Deploy him as your secret weapon.
Get him in there.
And it's Price, we need you.
Put Price in.
And oh, how that makes me laugh.
David Price was not wired to go to Boston.
It's my redemption song.
I'm happy David showed up today.
And you can suck my balls.
Oh, I can't wait.
And also Astros.
All right, we continue with your reaction, Blair and Maine. Your thoughts on David Price. Again, with Maine. Blair! Too bad. We're not going to talk to Blair and Maine. That's too bad.
Yeah, I'm cracking my lobster. Hold on.
Pete in Milton. Hi, Pete.
Anthony, now, I know the sample size isn't huge, but out of all the smart things you've ever said, I think one of the smartest came last week when you mentioned... you said Alex Cora actually, he speaks better or he's more well-spoken, rather, in his second language than Farrell is in his first, or than Farrell was in his first.
Yeah.
And honestly, to your credit, I think you meant that more as a compliment to Cora than an insult to Farrell. But, I mean, you're so right. I think clearly the guy can't make a wrong move right now. He says the right things. You guys joke about him having, you know, a horseshoe up his keister. And that thing is so far up there, man. They're going to need a plumber to get it out.
I'll just leave you with that. I mean, I think, you know, bringing in Kimbrel last night in the ninth. It's like, again, what are you doing?
I know that. I was, I shouldn't say I was surprised because I wasn't. I didn't think he was going to bypass Kimbrel. I thought the only shot.
Why were you taking out Eovaldi?
Well, see, because it was a save situation. And I think that they're going to lean on Kimbrel to do his job until they don't have to lean on him, which means the end of the World Series. So they're going to need him in the next round in his mind. So I'm not going to alienate him and isolate him. And then now I got to fill the eighth and ninth with a starter. So I just didn't think he was going to do that. Okay. But like, I look, believe me, I wanted him to keep Eovaldi in, but I didn't think he was going to do it.
So outside of all those moves that, like, everyone's working, it's unbelievable. If you think the manager's biggest role is atmosphere in the clubhouse and the attitude in the clubhouse and that thing, well, he's been spectacular because that team is together and feeling it and feeling each other and feeling the love and, you know, shutting up the hate. Like, they've got that thing going just huge.
I mean, look, they're all pointed in the right direction. You got guys playing at levels that they haven't played to this point in their career. The manager's got to get some of the credit for that. He has to.
Sean in Hingham, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. The thing I want to say is, Tony, so I know it's one game, but I don't want a cop-out answer. Do you or do you not have the confidence in David Price to go pitch well in the World Series? Because I think he does, and I know it's one game, but isn't a ton of the pressure off of him now? He's like, wow, I got one good start. It's kind of off my back.
Sure.
Maybe he thinks people will rally behind him. Do you think he's going to go out and just play with a, you know, a screw-it attitude?
I think that there's a much better chance of that now, yes. And so when you say, do I have 100% confidence? My answer is no, I don't. But do I have a lot more than I had before last night? Of course. I think you look at him now and you say, there's a chance that he got through this. Call it a breakthrough. Okay, he had a breakthrough. So here you go. Sometimes when that happens, it gets a lot easier.
Just for the both of you, who would you be more concerned for right now, Chris Sale or David Price?
Sale.
Same here.
Here's the question. How about Sale, Price, or Kimbrell? Who are you most worried of?
Oh, Kimbrell.
Kimbrell.
You're more worried about Kimbrell than Sale?
Yeah.
Yep.
And Price is the one you feel the most confident about?
Probably.
Like, yeah. Vay.
All he had to do was finally win a postseason game. Mike, it felt like it was never going to happen. It felt like it was never, ever, ever going to happen for this guy.
So you exercise those demons, and now the voices are no longer in his head.
Yeah, because think of what a mental patient he's been up until this point.
Oh, the biggest.
I mean, I think there's a chance of that.
Yeah, there is. Of course there is.
I think there's a chance of that, because sometimes all it takes is one, and then all of a sudden you're like, woo, okay, let's go play. Like, I think that can happen.
Mike in the truck. Hi, Mike.
How you doing? Just to piggyback on the Cora comments, doesn't it feel like since he's come in, you know, he's gotten the team to buy in, he's got them saying and doing all the right things, subdued celebrations, you know, they're not celebrating too much because I know more is expected of them. I think that they have a confidence in him and he has a confidence in them and it all just kind of works.
Sure, Mike. Thanks for the call. I think, you know, that's a little cliche. They're all pointed in the right direction. I mean, they are. But there was something not right about that team the last couple of years. And, you know, when you're not inside, you can't really put your finger on it. But clearly it had something to do with the manager. And that sort of has been lifted, whatever that is, whatever that intangible is.
I don't think there's any question about that. As much as they won 93 games, I felt like there was more there. They didn't play to the full of their ability. And it feels like now they finally are. That doesn't mean a World Series every year, but you should be able to, you know, maximize, and they weren't maximizing.
Nick in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Nick.
James, to say that the Astros are soft, I think is a little bit of a strong take there. Last 2 years, they've won two Game 7s, including a World Series. They just beat the Indians, and then they lost to a team with 108 wins. So to say they're cocky, sure.
Yeah, but to how they reacted to the Red Sox and just how frustrated they looked, especially, you know, I look at those Astros pitchers, and they, to me, they turned into, especially their relievers, they were spinning the wheel of gutless bums. And a lot of that is credit to the Red Sox. They frustrated them. They were patient at the plate time and again, stepping out. You could see these guys were starting to get really pissed. And how many walks? I should have probably looked this up so I could know and answer this for myself. But it just felt like starters. Verlander's been one of, if not the best postseason pitchers here for the last, you know, decade plus. And even he looked shook in his starts.
But I agree with that caller. That's not the Astros makeup. I mean, you turned them into that. I mean, just looking at that team, I mean, I'll take Verlander in a big game any day of the week.
Sure.
Jose Altuve and Bregman can play for me any day of the week.
Yeah, but it felt like it didn't take much. That's why I said it.
See, I still think Bregman choked. I still think he had good at-bats and was a factor in the series. They just got him out, and I think his yapping got the better of him, meaning, like, I mean, yeah, I mean, what can I tell you? I still feel like Bregman was a factor. I mean, if Benintendi doesn't make that spectacular play, he tied the game with a two-out RBI. I mean, it's...
And he might be the MVP of the series.
Right, he was that close to being a factor. That Houston team's a good team, and they got guys who can play and who are tough. and are gamers. And I'll take a lot of those guys.
I tell you, the guy that I even came away with a better impression of than I had going in was Gurriel, the first baseman. He had a great at-bat last night against Price. His defense is better than I thought. You know, the Red Sox were afraid to pitch to him with runners in scoring position. Like, he's a pretty good player, that guy.
Correa, I wonder about in terms of his heart and his head. And, like, he's a spectacular talent. But
that double play.
Right, that sort of stands out.
I mean, holy crap, how do you miss the bag like that? How do you miss it by that many?
It feels like that's a guy that's going a million miles an hour mentally. It's just, you know, maybe not soft. It's more that old Mike Tyson line, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Like, that was that team.
You got him. You got him. You did that to them. But that's not who they are. I don't think they're a gutless team. Dan in Middleborough. Hi, Dan.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much. What do you got?
So I'm going to set this off, but Price still sucks.
Okay.
But he's turning the page. And that's the thing that is most important to him, is the fact that now he's got this one point of reference that he can go back to in game two for the World Series, and then game five or six in the World Series, that he can go back and be like, yes, I can do this. And then he can have that swagger attitude that when he has, he's successful. Like, I love that last night he said, go post that. Like, that was perfect.
So I'm sorry to cut you off, Dan. So
I just think that someone said to me once, you know, as soon as you stop giving a bleep, that's when the good stuff happens. Right? Stop worrying about it so much. Just let it fly. And I'm not saying be stupid about it, like, you know, but in the case of a guy like Price, I do think his head was in the way. And so, you know what? Stop thinking about it so much. Just throw the ball. You throw 95. Throw 95. Don't be stupid. And the thing, I told you this earlier, the thing that was striking about that performance last night, first of all, I went through and counted a little while ago. I told you this during a break. We didn't say it on the air. 1 3-ball count.
Amazing.
One, and it was Altuve in the first inning. It wasn't that up with Gurriel. That was 2-2. That one's, he threw that many strikes in a row at 2-2. Okay, so he had 1 3-ball count. But the bigger thing to me was once he got the lead, it was like all of a sudden in about the third inning, you saw the velocity tick up. Just a mile or two. And I went, he smells it. He knows he's got it. Like, he knows he's got his good stuff. He's confident on the mound. He's in a rhythm. He believes in himself on the mound today, because all of a sudden he got more aggressive. And with Price, you never see that.
Okay.
Never.
Okay, now we get to the ultimate question. We're going to hear this a lot in the next week. What to do with the Red Sox lineup in Los Angeles or Milwaukee at the NL Park where there's no DH? Brett in Connecticut, what do you think?
I think Cora is going to play Betts at second base. They're not going to want to take Bradley out, and I think they're going to put, because JD's going to have to be in the outfield. I definitely think you can do it. I don't think the defense has been crazy good at second base, and he's a good player. I think that'll end up happening.
So, Brett, I know apparently you want it to happen because the JBJ files are now out. It's like, oh, we can't take JBJ. So now we got to do something goofy, like put Betts back at second. I don't mean to dump on you, Brett, but...
No, I know what you're saying, but he does work there every day. And
what makes you think Cora will do it?
Dependent upon matches. Well, I think against a right-handed pitching, I think they would. Against a lefty, I don't think you need to do it, but I think it may happen if you're facing Kershaw or Rue and there. I think it could happen. I'm not saying for sure, but I don't think it would be outside of Cora to do something like that and take a chance like that.
I do. I don't feel like that's Cora. Has Cora played someone wildly out of position this year?
No, I'd be surprised if they did it. Because, again, remember, they traded for Kinsler because of the defense at second base. So all of a sudden you're going to put a guy there who hasn't played there in how long? I mean, he appeared in a game there earlier in the year. He didn't start it. But they were pinched for personnel, and they had to move Betts to second base.
But in terms of what Cora's done and what he would do, he'll do something creative like that with the pitching staff. I've seen that now. If you want to tell me this guy's going to close, this guy's going to start, yes, that's all on the table because he's done a lot of that stuff. Positionally speaking, what sort of outside-the-box things has he done positionally?
I mean, I'd say the biggest stretch is probably like Swihart.
Swihart at first.
Or third. Did he play third?
Okay, in the regular season, in these playoff games.
No, I doubt it.
He's pretty much gone by the book. When there's lefties in there, he puts his right-handed bats in there. When there's a righty on the mound, he puts his left-handed bats in there. Bradley stays in center. Benintendi. So it's either Benintendi or Bradley's coming out. Who? Who comes out? Maz, who would you take out?
I think that they are going to take Benintendi out of the lineup and leave Bradley in center because of the size of Dodger Stadium's outfield. Again, that's a long, slow way to say it.
Martinez goes where?
Left.
Martinez in left, Bradley in center. Mookie Betts, obviously.
And the reason you put him in left is just because of the shorter throw. The dimensions are the same at left to right. With the Diamondbacks last year, I looked it up, Martinez played right field. He didn't play left at Dodger Stadium. But you're not going to take Betts out of right field. He's got the better arm, you know, the longer throw to third. So to me, it would be Betts stays in right, Martinez plays left field. You know, and look, I suppose they could put Benintendi in center, right, and do it that way. Or Betts in center, however you want. I mean, they certainly did that in some of the American League games.
No, but are you going with Bradley or Benintendi?
I would keep Bradley in center field at Dodger Stadium because it's a big outfield. So to me, I think the defense there will matter. And I think that that's what Cora is going to do. So maybe that's why I'm leaning that way. I think Cora is going to do that, so that's probably right. But to me, because of the size of the outfield there, you're going to need a center fielder.
More on this on the Baseball Reporters coming up at 6. Coming up next is the final word. Do we have fresh... Squeaky, fresh Mad Mike, fresh Fuppets. What do we got?
We have a fresh Squeaky Maz.
Oh, love it.
How about any hot? Are you going to eat that?
I have the raw feed of it.
Yes, yes. Can I hear Maz raw with Sosie, please? I need to hear that, in fact, today. So let's just guess. What was Maz's most notable rant this week? There's just so many. The one today with spin on that at 102.
I'm looking at what it's named, and I don't even know what the hell this is.
What was, Nick, give me.
Squeaky Maz gets mail?
I know what that is.
Right. All right. We'll listen to it right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, The Sports Hub. Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you're looking for the best deal on tires, there is only one place to go. That's Town Fair Tire. The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire.
Nobody. Let me also remind people that Agenda Free Friday has been brought to you by Planet Fitness. The world judges they don't. PlanetFitness.com.
Where the hell's Maz?
Maz is doing a TV interview in the hallway.
Oh, right.
Mr. Yes. Fancy Pants baseball expert is now being called upon to do TV interviews.
Old,
so,
old baseball boy has to get the
big
baseball
time.
Takes.
Yeah, no, Mr. Red Light out there.
Well, Maz was very squeaky this week and when it came to getting hate mail, which we've all been inundated with here, especially in the last 24 hours or since the Red Sox have moved on to the World Series. So here's Squeaky Maz, with new graphics as well here on the
I love it.
NBC Sports Boston side.
Well done.
That's amazing.
It's Maz in a mouse outfit, basically. Yeah.
So here's Squeaky Maz getting mail.
Get Stephen Boston, subject Maz, you suck at your job. That's a subject line. Stephen Boston, Maz. You suck at your job. And he just writes, Nathan Eovaldi, parentheses, just another guy. As if that's what I said about Eovaldi, which I did. Ryan Brazier, parentheses, is that Brazier? I did say that too. Steve Pierce, parentheses, washed up, which I didn't say. Steve.
I got an email on you today. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it was jumping off of your, for two incredible wins by the Patriots and Red Sox, and Maz's take is, why does it feel like both lost? The emailer says to me, other Maz takes on history. The Battle of Yorktown. Mike, I liked how the British looked. I did. I guess we won, but who would you rather be long term? July 20th, 1969. Quote, the moon? Really? Now we're clapping for the moon? Give me Mars and maybe you have something, but the moon, please.
Well, I stand by that one. Big deal. What's on the moon?
1980, do you believe in miracles? Maz, nope.
I gave a letter to the postman.
And then I added, Gulf War. Fake win.
She wrote about it. Return to sender.
You suck at your job. That's a subject line. Stephen Boston, Maz. Hyphen, you suck at your job. Steve Pierce, washed up.
We had a quarrel,
which I didn't say.
Back.
Steve.
I write, I'm sorry, but my letter keeps coming back.
Outstanding. And thanks to Hardy for putting that together.
Very talented guy, that Hardy.
Yeah, maybe the biggest mistake I've maybe made in my radio career is a couple of months back, I realized that my email was incorrect on 98.5sportshub.com, and I went to the web department and said, hey, can you fix that? Because I wasn't getting any emails.
That's much better.
Now I am. and I thank you for all of them. Believe me, I do. We also have this. Here is Maz.
If you miss this, when Bob Soucy comes, we do a little hot takes with Bob Soucy. Little rejoin form. And Maz likes to sing over it. If you're not listening at that time, this is what this is about. But I feel like this is going to be incredible. And here we go. Here we go, Maz. You ready? It's getting smoky in here, Maz.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Here we go.
You can feel it.
Murray, turn the thermostat down, man.
Here comes Bob Soucy. Smoking Bob Soucy and his hot, hot takes. Hot, hot, hot. We love Bob Soucy. Smoking Bob Soucy and his hot, hot takes.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty much.
You're in key and everything.
Oh, yeah, no, I got it down, Murray. I have some hidden talents that even you don't know about.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.